Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening we'll talk about power addiction among African leaders. And with us tonight is my colleague, John Tanza. John is the host of South Sudan in Focus program here at VOA. Welcome to the show, John.
It's my pleasure to be here.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners.
How is Durban?
Very fine. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Hussein Kiflu. Kiflu is an Ethiopian social and political commentator. He's also a research assistant at the Southern Methodist University. Good afternoon, Kiflu.
Good afternoon, Douglas, and good afternoon, Suleiman in Durban. Good evening. And also my friend from Sudan, South Sudan.
Yes.
Good evening.
Gentlemen, once again, welcome to the show. As I said, our topic tonight, we're going to look at the power addiction among African leaders. Our listeners may know that, for instance, in Libya, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi refused to give up power after more than four decades in charge of that country until he was eventually murdered. The Arab Spring came in Tunisia and Egypt. The presidents were forced from power after mass street demonstrations. A little earlier on in Ivory Coast, Laura Gbagbo was caught up in a stalemate after he was sworn in as president, despite the country's UN-backed electoral commission declaring his rival as the winner of the poll. Many leaders on the continent have amended or are attempting to amend their constitutions to remove term limits. So what makes some of these leaders cling to power at all costs? Let me start here, John.
The culture of impunity is what makes them cling to power, because they have done so much, they've done many bad things to their own people, and they are so scared that if they go out there without the bodyguards, without the tanks, without anything, there's possibility that they will be brought to account. Mm-hmm. And so that's one. Number two, there are lots of hidden agenda that some of these leaders have. For instance, they become so rich within a very short time, and people wonder where they get that money from. Mm. And so they are also afraid that when they go out there without the machinery of the state, then they become powerless, because all these riches can be stripped from them. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is, there's something wrong that they have done that they don't want to, be held accountable for.
Yeah. Kiflu, you agree with that?
Yes, I agree with that. He's right. This culture of wanting to cling to power forever as a lifetime president, it's like a vicious cycle, even in my own lifetime, I remember Emperor Haile Selassie. Emperor Haile Selassie had named his own son, as his successor, the Crown Prince Asfawasan. And yet, Emperor Haile Selassie, even though he had started manifesting this premature senility, and despite having, a lot of crises in his hands, the telltale signs of his government collapsing, he never wanted to give up power. He never wanted to transfer power peacefully, even to his own son, whom he named as Crown Prince. And then came the military government, Mengistu Haile Mariam, and until he was chased out of his power, he wanted to cling to power. And now we have the same scenario. So I think the way I see it, the problem is, one dictator who wants to cling to power for a life begets another dictator who wants to cling to power. Even though they say that I'm going to be unlike my predecessor, in the case of Uganda, we all know that President Museveni made a speech, I think it was in New York, at the UN meeting, that the problem of Africa is that dictators want to cling to power. And now we can see that where he is. So it's a vicious circle, and so I agree. It's the culture. So I agree.
I see. Suleiman, it appears if whoever wants power wants it to keep it for good.
Yeah, I think we better categorize them and say that at the moment we have got two categories of leaders on the continent. They are those who understand the concept of being a president as being a service to the people, using the God-given extra talent and intelligence to guide others and set a precedence and make life better. And then there is a category of those who are sick, who take power with other intentions, who have decided that to them, maybe due to their background or due to the conditions they find on the ground, they find that to them, power means everything. I think that category, the second category, is not only addicted, but they are pathologically sick. They are sick. They don't know where they are. To them, power means everything. And at the moment, there is even very little which can be done to help them to leave power other than kicking them out.
I see. So, John, as Suleiman mentions there, what happened to the idea of politics being a public service, why you go to serve the people? In other areas of the world or in the past, people used to think of leadership as a service to the people. You are the servant of the people. That doesn't seem to be the case these days.
Well, it's not the case these days because the concept of being a leader has been misunderstood, or rather put in a way that people go into politics in order to loot, because they see this is the easiest place where you can take a lot of money and nobody holds you accountable. Because if you look at what they call parliament that is supposed to hold the executive accountable, this parliament becomes a rubber stamp because most of the leaders there want to please the president so that they are appointed as ministers, they are appointed as head of parastatals. And so the bottom line is the people who elect these MPs or members of parliament suffer because these members of parliament go there for their own agenda, not the agenda of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen it that in my country, most people who would want to opt to go for politics, you see them becoming rich within a very short time. And you wonder if an MP even MP's salary is, let's say, $5,000 per month, and he has like 20 people to take care of, where does he get money to buy a $65,000 vehicle? And he has five of them, all his own. Where does he get money to put up a 5-6-story building within a very short time? So you wonder. And to me, my conclusion is that people go to politics in order to get rich.
So, Sulem Kifuru, to what extent is corruption and stealing, this idea of stealing national resources, a factor in these leaders clinging on to power?
Yes, that is one factor, because in most cases, the power of these so-called leaders in most countries in Africa are limitless, even though they pretend that they have a constitution, that their power is limited by the constitution. That is a farce. So because of their limitless power, because they are absolute dictators, they loot the resources of the country. They give it to whomever they want. You know, they create patronage. And those who refuse to keep in line with their dictatorship, those who refuse to be psychopaths, they will be eliminated. And another point that we forgot is that, you know, one, the reason that they want to cling to power, most of these dictators, is that the very means that they came to power is usually by the barrel of the gun. And then the way they maintain their power is also by the barrel of the gun. And then in the process, you know, they commit a lot of crimes. So at some point, they also fear to step down, even though in the case of my country, at one point, you know, in 2005, when the incumbent, the ruling party of Malazenari, when it lost that election, and when the opposition realized that there is this fear of stepping down, and they even told them that they're not going to witch hunt, and you know, there's not going to be any retaliation, and because most of the opposition leaders really felt responsible that that they want to keep the country safe. You know, they didn't want the country to go in the path of civil war. They tried to comfort them. They really tried to reassure them that there is not going to be any backlash. But still, you know, they didn't want to accede to the defeat. Mm-hmm. So they clung to power. Now, you know, the consequence of clinging to power is sometimes, you know, when some of these leaders, it happened in Africa, we saw it in some African countries, when suddenly a dictator who wanted to cling to power dies, like Gaddafi, that country, because they haven't left any room for peaceful transfer of power. They didn't want any responsible person to emerge, you know, in their absence. Libya, in the case of Libya and even some of African countries, they went to civil war.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Ethiopia, now we still even, there is a stalemate between his lieutenants and his deputies when Meles died. And because of that stalemate, they appointed one person, you know, Hailemariam Desalegn. He has no power. And they force the people, you know, to worship a dead person.
What do you mean? What do you mean, worship a dead person? How?
Yeah, I mean, they tell us, you know, Meles was a visionary leader, and the prime minister, the current prime minister, Hailemariam Desalegn, doesn't have a power of, you know, he can't exercise power by himself. You know, he can't even command the armed forces. There is a committee, you know, behind him.
Mm.
There is a committee, you know, in the ruling party, where the real power resides is in the Tigray People's Liberation Front.
Mm-hmm.
From the minority ethnic group from where the late Meles Zenawi emerged.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people, because they found it difficult from, you know, for one of them to emerge as a strong man and replace Meles Zenawi, they thought they can solve this problem by appointing Hailemariam Desalegn. But in the meantime, they are the ones who run the show.
I see. So, Suleiman, is it fair to assume that some of these leaders act contrary to the perception that they are strong leaders? They may be very insecure, and they think if they left power, they would either be held to account or lynched or made poor. Is it because of that insecurity that they want to cling to power?
You see, the biggest problem is that they created a problem themselves. For a normal leader who is a sensible and patriotic, Douglas, 10 years are enough to do whatever you can do. You don't need more than 10 years. Once you go beyond 10 years, the disorder virus steps into someone's head and he goes into a destructive mode. From 10 years upwards, the nation is being destroyed systematically. The way you have seen in Burundi, after 10 years, immediately after 10 years, like the way now Nkurunziza has started, he starts with a purging. Whoever has raised his voice against him, he is causing instability. They are the first to be hit on the head so that the people are subjugated. From there, state institutions are destroyed one by one. The police, the army, every security institution, even the government jobs, begin to be personalized. From there, let's say, after 10 years, you have no state, it is going into crumbling. By the time you reach 15 years or above, the leader is almost insane. By 20 years, insanity has set in, and the country is in autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, he sees himself as everything. That is why for people like Museveni, who have gone 30 years, as of now, it is very difficult to know whether he's even still sane. He's totally mad, because he wakes up and says one day, the army belongs to me. The money in the country belongs to me. The country belongs to me. So are other dictators. They see nobody. They cannot move out of power because they have destroyed almost everything called a nation.
I see. Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of power addiction among African leaders. Well, maybe we don't need the break. Let's continue. But for those of you joining us right now, we are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is power addiction among African leaders. Our panelists are John Tanza, my colleague, host of South Sudan in Focus, Hussein Kiflu, social and political commentator and research associate at the Southern Methodist University, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, here in Studio 9. Now, John, you just heard from Suleiman there. The institutions, for a leader to be able to stay in power longer than he's ought to, he makes sure that institutions have collapsed, because those that would hold him accountable are not there, so he becomes the state virtually.
Yes, well, they do it tactically because they know that the instruments of accountability are strong. You cannot escape them. And so what they do is they appoint their cronies in these strategic institutions like the judiciary, the head of the parliament, like put a speaker there who is your person, and then put a finance minister who is your buddy. And put someone in charge of the military who is your friend.
Or son, and, or brother.
Or brother, to the extreme. And someone in charge of national security who is your man. And so you continue ruling, and these people protect you because they benefit by proxy. They are given handouts, and they also enrich themselves. They have their own projects. And so the circle continues within this clique. And this is done at the expense of the poor who are supposed to get services from the government, as they say. But it's unfortunate that voters, year in, year out, are blindfolded with $2-3 during election time, and they still vote these corrupt leaders to go back to office. And this is what is happening in Africa. Despite the civic education, despite the awareness that people create about people's rights, about human rights, but the same people vote. And once they vote these dictators in, they just end up being victims of injustice. And the list is just endless. It's a sad story.
So, gentlemen, since we seem to have an agreement that this is actually an addiction, so in that case, don't we need a medicine? So, Kiflu, what ought to be done now in that case? Because if you look across the continent, the number of people who want to cling to power or who already succeeded, some 30 years, 25, 35, the number is growing, it's not reducing. So what ought to be done?
I think what ought to be done is for activists, for human rights defenders, even for journalists who respect their profession, they have to continue to speak the truth. They have to create awareness that absolute power corrupts absolutely. It is not. It is still. It's not a cliche. I mean, it's still a valid statement. So, these dictators who want to cling to power for a life, they not only destroy institutions, they even create a regimented society. They create a fear of climate. And because of that, we see that what's happening in Rwanda, and they tell us that the whole people wants Paul Kagame to reign in forever. And which is not the case. We know that we met Rwandans outside of Rwanda as refugees, as asylum seekers. They are even afraid to speak up. To that extent, these dictators, tries to wield their power, and it's very scary. So I think the solution, the medicine, is for activists to continue speaking up courageously, and to try to influence African Union. African Union has some kind of legislation against groups who take power by a coup d'etat. But African Union should also have to come up with some kind of legislation. Of course, the African Union is also controlled by these defectors, but still, you know, the activists shouldn't be discouraged by that. They have to continue speaking up and try to influence the African Union and make it pass some kind of legislation for those who rig elections, for those who want to continue, you know, forever. There is an argument presented by Andrew Mwenda, by the likes of Andrew Mwenda, you know, trying to justify, you know, and trying to equate it with some European countries that doesn't have that don't have you know, that doesn't have term limits. But these countries have checks and balance, effective checks and balance, even though they don't have term limits for their prime ministers, for their presidents. Their institutions are very strong. In the case of most sub-Saharan African countries, that is not the case. You know, they control all the institutions. They even control, you know, they create a climate of fear in the society. And so justifying to do away with presidential, you know, or term limits is not right. So we have until we make sure that we have proper checks and balances, that the power of any leader is limited, is limited, you know, we have to we have to continue speaking up against this kind of, you know, dictatorship.
I see. Suleiman, Kifuru there talks about speaking out by the activists, by everybody who can speak out. But I wonder which kind of language these leaders would understand, because speaking out alone doesn't quite cut it unless you speak a different language. What do you think? What language do you understand?
With Chifuru. And then in addition to what you have said, what you're asking is that the activists need to continue, because what is important is to reach the masses. The examples in Burkina Faso, the examples in Nigeria, they have shown us that once the population itself is enlightened, then it can kick out these dictators. What the activists need to be clear about, and what we should make clear to the people, is that there is no correlation between overstaying and the success of governance. Mandela stayed only 4 years, but his achievement, only the achievement within 4 years, are better than those which Museveni has tried to get in 30 years, or Bia, or Santos. They have achieved almost not even a third of what he has achieved. I'll go also to Ethiopia. Recently, Ethiopia launched, my friend Kifuru's home, they launched a railway service around town. This railway service was built below 5 years. Imagine, within below 5 years, they have been able, this area has been able to build a railway in town, an electric railway in town. How much will he do in 10 years? In 10 years means Djibouti will be connected by railway. It means some other development will be there. That will be enough for him. It doesn't mean that a leader has to stay for 30 years. Actually, many of them, the Musevenis, the Dos Santos, the Bias, they have achieved nothing. Even within 5 years, you cannot get a railway line in Uganda. You don't even have a bus service, government bus service in Uganda. You don't even have a national bank in Uganda, for that matter, for a man like Museveni, who has stayed 30 years in power. So is Bia, so is Yahya Jammeh. So all these dictators who have said, instead the countries are going backwards. In summary, after they have left, even the countries are so difficult to govern, because they create structures which are incompatible, which are incompatible with the system that may develop. The way you see in Burkina Faso, you have got a private or presidential guard who are incompatible with the army. The way it was in Libya, you have got a special presidential unit which is incompatible. So the country just breaks down after they have left. So the more they stay, the more it will be difficult to put the country together when eventually they leave.
So, John, maybe...
Can I jump in?
Okay, jump in briefly, yes. Go ahead, briefly.
You know, Suleiman brought up a very good example about the railway line. They're making a fetish of this railway line, and But these people stayed in, you know, they have been in power for the last 25 years. And we're not even sure about the viability of this rail line. It depends upon electricity power. And in Ethiopia, electricity power is in, you know, it's a big problem. Yeah. So let's wait and see. And so it's just to give you that information.
I see. So, John, maybe some of these leaders, they fear that if they do a lot of good things or do some development in their countries, they may finish all the work so soon, so they must spread it out,
do nothing for some time. That's not necessarily the case. They are coming without projects. Mm-hmm. They come with their personal projects, personal ambitions of becoming very rich. And, you know, they do that so that you don't touch them, because money is power.
Mm-hmm.
And you have seen that most of the people who have overstayed are very rich and they're very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get back to the question of using civil society to change. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether the civil society will be very, very active in a militarized society. I'm saying that, looking at the country like South Sudan. South Sudan is so militarized that people are afraid to speak. The media is working on self-censorship because the government does not want to listen to any other voice. They want the people to listen to their lies only. I'm sorry to say that, but that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Any alternative voice is regarded as an opposition. It's regarded as, you know, poisonous. And so in a country like that, I don't see the civil society reaching out to the people with a message of change.
I see.
African Union, coming to African Union, it's a club of dictators. I have a saying in my mother tongue that the dog does not bite its tail very hard. So I don't see African Union cracking down on these people who are overstaying in power. All we need is a critical mass, an elite mass that can reach out to tell the common man and women who are voting every year to say, no, don't vote this year. You are voting for a thief who will go and steal your money.
So briefly, in one word or two, do you think, John, that this status quo can be changed?
It can be changed, but it needs a lot of work. And this has to start with an elite mass. The reason why I'm saying that is because if you are touched that this country needs a change, this continent needs a change, then you need to reach out to somebody who is also touched.
I see.
And the three, four of you, or five of you in each country could come up with a consortium that would, you know, do something that would result into a positive results. Because as it is now, the people inside are helpless.
Suleiman, one word, yes or no? Can the status quo change?
So long as the international community stops bankrolling the dictators, because they use the money to buy arms, and it is these arms which are suppressing the local attempts to throw them out of power.
Kifulo, one word, yes or no?
Yes, it takes time, but there is one thing that I would like to add.
Very briefly, though.
About the civil society. We cannot completely disregard the civil society, because without civil society activism, we cannot create critical mass. Other alternative is a kind of armed resistance. That may work or may not work. In most cases, in fact, we will have another dictator who wants to cling to power. You know, if you remember, if we remember these guys like the Kagames, the Mullah Zenawis, the Musavinis, they came to power.
We are out of time, though, Kifulu.
You know, talking about public spirit. You know,
we are out of time. We are out of time, Kifulu.
Yeah.
We are out. We shall maybe continue this debate. That's the time we have for this additional reporters roundtable. Let me thank our panel, John Tanza, host of South Sudan in Focus, Hussein Kifulu, an Ethiopian social and political commentator, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting us.
You're welcome. Our producer today was Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer was John Drayden. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still listen to it by going to our main website at www.vnews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vnews.com. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington.